Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of March 9th. This week we were joined by Mary Foley, who has an article in the current issue called Exceptional Pastoring, about women in positions of parish leadership. Dr. Foley served for 4 years as a pastoral life coordinator at a parish in the Midwest. We began by asking her to explain for us the responsibilities of the pastoral life coordinator.
Let me begin by first saying, call me Mary.
Okay.
And then I'd also like to begin by saying a few words for your listeners about the title used for this ministry, because it is different in different parts of the country. My title was actually pastoral life coordinator. Others who serve in this ministry for our church hold titles like parish director or pastoral administrator, but the most often used term is parish life coordinator. All of these titles are used for one who is appointed by the diocesan bishop to lead a parish in the absence of a resident priest pastor. And parish life coordinator is the title that's used in the national certification standards that were approved by the U.S. bishops. So it's appropriate that we use that title. I just wanted to share that there are many that are used still today. I recently served for a little over 4 years in this position.
And so you were there for 4 years. And what exactly did your ministry entail?
I was responsible for the overall pastoral leadership and administration of the parish. So my letter of appointment stated that I was to do all of the things normally done by a pastor, with the exception of sacramental matters. So on a practical level, this meant that I was the one living in the rectory. I was the one who was present to parishioners all of the time. I was the one entrusted with the day-to-day pastoring of the people. This certainly involved direct pastoral care of people in times of crisis or sickness, or when people were dying or when they experienced the loss of a loved one. It also meant overseeing the many parish ministries and providing ongoing formation for all of those who were involved in ministry. For me, an essential part of this pastoring means calling forth the gifts that God has given to the community, and doing this gives me great joy, as I did talk about in my article. I think it is part of my own giftedness to recognize the gifts in others, and encouraging them and nurturing them is something that gives me great joy. It's like seeing new life being born into the world. And because of the gifts of so many others, our parish was able to grow from 750 families to 935 families within a few years. And in our RE program, we grew from having 400 children to 535. So it just is, again, part of the whole pastoring experience is calling forth the gifts of others. It's never a ministry that's something that you do alone. In my role as parish life coordinator, I supervised the parish staff and led the parish pastoral council and the parish finance council. Both myself and the parish were very fortunate to have gifted and talented people serving in all of these capacities. Together, we were able to help the parish eliminate a $100,000 operating deficit within 3 years, and many new ministries were begun. The life of a parish life coordinator, like that of a pastor, is very full, and you have the privilege of being with people at some critical and wonderful times in their lives, and have the opportunity to share the Word of God in many ways. Tim, knowing that this interview was going to take place, I had also been working on some other writing, and I made a list for you of what a typical week could look like.
Oh, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Parish life coordinator. So here's what a week of mine could have looked like. Presiding at several weekday communion services, meeting with some couples preparing for marriage, helping a family to plan a funeral and preaching at the funeral mass, teaching about Vatican II with our RCIA candidates, visiting sick people in the hospital, talking with children in classrooms about the saints or about vocations, reviewing bills and checks prepared by the parish business manager. I can't say that was always a favorite part, but a very regular part. Planning for a liturgical season with the parish liturgy committee, teaching a class for the diocesan lay ministry formation program, meeting with an arborist about plans for the care of trees on the parish grounds in the coming year, meeting with the company that supplied sanitizers for the bathroom to discuss cost and different options, stopping at Dunkin' Donuts and getting coffee and donuts for the men and women volunteering their time to count the Sunday collection, leading a parish pastoral council meeting focused on long-range planning, speaking to several of our Bible study groups about the particular book being studied, talking with a young girl and her family about plans for her quinceañera, meeting with various staff people, talking with a parish volunteer about doing some much-needed remodeling in the parish office bathroom, dealing with complaints, whether about the wasp nest by a church door, a running toilet in the ladies' room, crumbs of food left behind in the parish hall, or about something I did or said, being there for a woman who discovered her husband being unfaithful, or for a man who knew he was going to die and wanted to make some plans, or for the parents of a teenager who had been suspended from school, making sure that the doors are locked and lights are out when they're supposed to be, looking forward to every weekend celebration when the whole community is gathered together, sharing in song, worship, and Eucharist, shaking hands, hearing stories, getting some hugs, too.
That's great.
I would say these are the typical things, and there are always the unexpected.
Of course. Well, that sounds like you have a busy week to start with all of that.
You know, I mean, things that come out of the blue, the death of a 14-year-old killed in a car accident, suicide of a 17-year-old, attempted suicide of a 7th grader, or a boiler blowing up in the church basement. Those are just some of the many unexpected things that enter into an already full life. But it's a great privilege. I could never stress that enough. And it's a ministry that is full of life and full of joy. And, of course, a very important part of that ministry, too, is making sure that there are arrangements for priests to be there for the celebration of Mass on Sunday, and in our case, on some weekdays as well, and also to be there for celebration of other sacraments. And we were very fortunate in having some gifted priests who helped our parish.
Now, you've painted quite a picture, not just for any pastoral leader, that their job is far more than just work on a Sunday. How were you trained to take up this ministry?
Well, I have served in a variety of capacities in parish ministry for probably more than 20 years, and I think it was a gradual path for me leading to this. The U.S. bishops have actually now established some national standards for the certification of a number of different kinds of lay ecclesial ministry. And these are followed more or less from diocese to diocese, but we do have national standards now that, in fact, they were just established a few years ago and are already having some further revisions made to them. So it's very good work. Our bishops and professional ministry organizations have worked collaboratively together on. In any case, those who would, according to the standards, those who would serve as a parish life coordinator would typically have a master's degree in divinity or a related field of study, some good years of experience in parish ministry, and then there are various other standards in terms of levels of maturity, psychological development, and certain necessary skills. For myself, I do have a lot of parish ministry experience. My educational background, I graduated at the undergraduate level with a double major in religious studies and psychology. I hold a Master of Divinity degree, and I received my Doctor of Ministry degree from Catholic Theological Union in 2007. Before I went to that diocese to become a parish life coordinator, before I left Chicago, that's my home diocese, I was a certified pastoral associate and also co-chair of the Pastoral Associates of the Archdiocese of Chicago. And I've been very fortunate through my experiences with PAC, with the National Association of Lay Ministry, and also with the Midwest Pastoral Administrators Conference to come to know many people serving in lay ecclesial ministry around the country, especially others who have been or who do serve as parish life coordinators. And in addition to the national certification standards, I also know now that there are certain dioceses that have their own, in some cases, very well-developed policies regarding the qualifications for parish life coordinators.
Now, you say in your article, and this is kind of a sensitive issue, but that some people see the ministry of parish life coordinator as in some way devaluing the priesthood. Maybe you can say a little bit more about that whole controversy.
Sure. I don't suggest that it's widespread, but it's something that's out there. And I would say, first of all, I do not think that there are many people overall who have even heard of the ministry of parish life coordinator, much less many who have experienced it or who've done any research on this role in ministry in our church. So some of the things I have heard or read from others come from a perspective that is not fully informed. I can give you an example. A few years ago, I did an interview with another Catholic publication, which was published and included a picture of me wearing an alb at a prayer service on the Feast of St. Francis as I blessed some animals with holy water. It was the kids in our e-program had brought their pets. Anyway, after this article with its accompanying picture came out, there was some internet chatter suggesting that women like me are pretending to be priests and that this was all bad for priestly vocations. So I would say that some people simply are not well informed. For example, those who wrote things like this, I think, don't realize that an alb is a vestment for appropriate to the baptized, and that the role I was filling was also one appropriate for a lay ecclesial ministry. So I think sometimes things are said come from lack of information. The idea that by encouraging lay ecclesial ministry, especially in having lay people in significant positions of parish leadership, the idea that this can threaten priestly vocations, I believe, is very short-sighted, and unfortunately is one held not only by some internet bloggers, but even by some people who are well-informed in our church. And I would say even some of our bishops, because as I have heard it both firsthand and anecdotally, the thinking goes something like this. If young men can see that they not only have the opportunity to serve our church as married deacons, but they learn that they can also do valuable ministry in our church by serving as lay people, then they will not be attracted to seminary studies or priesthood. I believe that this kind of thinking rises out of fear at a time when we are facing a serious priest shortage in our country. And with all due respect to the bishops and others who hold this view, I fear that fear is clouding their thinking. In my view, what we need, and I try to be humble as I say this, but I really believe that what we need most in order to encourage vocations to the priesthood is to have a healthy church where all of the gifts that God has given are celebrated and used for the good of the kingdom. And this includes seeing that there is an opportunity for the exercise of different roles in ministry. The role of parish life coordinator, I will admit, is not an ordinary role. It is one that is allowed by a special provision in canon law. And I want to acknowledge as well that the ordinary ministry of the baptized is exercised in the world, where people live as leaders of families and as members of society, and it's there that they share the good news of the gospel and live lives that draw other people to Christ. But there is a valid, and I would say necessary, role for lay people in ecclesial ministry. I would further say there's a special need for lay women to be active in publicly visible ministry in the church, especially in a time when the number of women religious are dwindling as well. I don't think that it is the bishops of our church who will nurture the most vocations to priesthood or to religious life. I think it is lay people. I think it is the mothers and fathers of children, adult lay people in our church who today want to be valued as full members of the church and who want to see their children live fulfilled lives. I believe that one of the most important things we can do to increase the numbers of priests and religious in our church is to teach about and encourage all vocations to ministry, whether they are vocations to ordained ministry, religious life, or lay ecclesial ministry. I think this will make the church healthy, and it will also provide enough leaders who can both serve as models for our children and can help to discern, nurture, and call forth the vocations that God gives to us as church, whatever those vocations may be. Part of the short-sightedness that I see, I think, is in anyone, bishops included, thinking that they have the right philosophy or program to solve the problem with the shortage of priests. Vocations are God-given. They are not created by come-and-see weekends or vocation programs. Those are things that can help to affirm and nurture vocations, but I think that the most effective vocation work we can do is to build up the church using all the gifts that God has given to us so that people can see that service to God as a priest, a religious, or as a lay ecclesial minister is an essential part of the whole, and that all are joyful ways of living one's life together in ministry with others. How's that for a long answer to your question?
Well, that's great. I appreciate your thoughtfulness. Now, you touch upon this a little bit in your previous answer, but what do parish life coordinators experience in terms of their working relationships with, you mentioned a little bit about the bishops, but also with other clergy?
I think the answer to your question depends on the circumstances. I mentioned something about my experience in my article. I was the only person serving in such a role within four dioceses in my state. So it was basically a role that was unheard of before. And there were some difficulties as a result. In my article, I talk about some of the local priests who sort of, some of them, not all of them, but some of them who sort of rebelled against the idea that the bishop wanted me to attend their cluster meetings. And they had the whole thing go to the Presbyteral Council, where it was finally resolved. And about 6 months after I began my work there, I began attending the meetings with the priests. Some were very welcoming, and some over time who initially objected to my presence became very friendly colleagues. So it was a process, and there were relationships that kind of evolved. And in terms of other priests, there were other priests in the community who volunteered to provide sacramental service to the parish and some retired priests, and they were wonderful, and their support and friendship will never be forgotten. There are other dioceses in the country where this model of ministry has been in place for many years, places where parish life coordinator is, or parish director or pastoral administrator is part of the normal nomenclature. And from talking with others around the country, I can tell you that some bishops are as supportive of their parish life coordinators as they are of their priest pastors, including them together in important diocesan events. I had good relationships with my two bishops. Some bishops are different than others. I think you'll find a great variation in the experience of parish life coordinators. But I would say that of the people that I have met who serve in this role in ministry for our church, especially those who have been in a stable ministry within one diocese over time with the same bishop, really do enjoy good working relationships with their bishops and their brother clergy.
What advice would you offer to people who are considering beginning the ministry of parish life coordinator in a parish or a diocese?
You know, Tim, I really appreciate having the opportunity to answer that question, because I think a lot of people in our country today are really struggling about what to do in response to the priest shortage, and different people have different ideas and are trying different things. And I really do believe that this is a valuable and viable model for our church. It is an extraordinary model. It's not ordinary, and it's not perfect. I mean, there's something, there is a disconnect in separating pastoring from the sacramental ministry of the church, but it isn't something that that is always present and is being a negative in terms of day-to-day life of a parish. And in fact, I think that there are many things that people serving in this role as lay people bring as valuable gifts to this ministry. So I would say that things need to begin at the diocesan level with a good deal of research. I would tell people to go and find places where this model is working well. I would personally recommend. I've been traveling around and visiting some different dioceses and talking with diocesan officials, and I would personally recommend contacting the Diocese of Green Bay, where this model has been in use for many years. They have a very well-developed set of guidelines, which I've read, and they include clearly stated responsibilities for the role they call parish director, and it's wonderful. There's a priest who oversees the entire process for the bishop there. I hope he doesn't mind me dropping his name, but it is Father Paul DeMuth, and I think it would be good for people to be able to talk to somebody like him that have had a great deal of experience. He's a wise and wonderful man who may be able to share copies of their materials. I think learning from another diocese that has had many years of experience is the very best place to start. Something else I would recommend to folks is reading a pastoral letter that was written by Cardinal Mahoney of Los Angeles a few years ago, in which he talks about the role of parish life coordinators. I think it's a letter that every bishop should read. And the next most important things, I think, are just to educate people about this role, beginning at the diocesan level. If a bishop wanted to implement this ministry, or if it was recommended to him, I would say then, you know, start talking about it with diocesan officials so they can understand what it is. And then educate the clergy and others who serve in ministry and in parishes, not only at the first parish where the model is going to be implemented, but in the whole diocese, to let people know that this is a valued ministry of the church and something that can help us during this time in history. And really prepare the people in the pews and be honest with them about the priest shortage. I absolutely think that people have been done a great disservice in the church by being kept in the dark about the priest shortage. And I think this comes from fear. I don't know why, but I think church leaders have been afraid to tell people how bad things are. I don't know if they're afraid they're going to lose people, but I don't think most lay people have any idea how the shortage is going to affect them within the next 10 years. There's some pockets in our country where it's not so bad, but more and more, even in big metropolitan areas, they're going to be really hit by the shortage. So be completely honest and tell people what the situation is and encourage them to think of ways that the church and our parishes can not only survive but thrive during challenging times. I believe and I have witnessed that lay people can learn to adapt to creative ways of keeping viable parishes open and growing even without a resident priest pastor.
Now, you were in this ministry for 4 years, and as mm-hmm. you write in your article, it was a great grace and privilege for you to do so. Well, what's next for you now?
Well, as I don't know, that is the short answer, and now I'd like to give you a longer
okay.
answer. I don't know. I have been truly blessed, as I said in the article, in being able to do what I've most wanted to do in ministry and being able to be the pastoral leader of a parish, and I do hope with all my heart to have that opportunity again someday, but we will see what the Lord has in store. I anticipating this question and reflecting on it for a while, Tim, I decided that perhaps I could close by sharing a story with you.
Sure.
And it's going to take us off track for a minute,
okay.
but it will bring me back to answering the question about what's next. And actually, it's a story about a bishop who I know, not one that I've ever worked with, but one whom I love and respect. Many people know of Bishop Thomas Gumbleton. He's now a retired auxiliary bishop from Detroit. I first met him at a conference about 20 years ago in Washington, D.C., when he was giving a talk on peace. And during the presentation, he showed a short animated film on the bombing of Hiroshima. After the film, I approached him and asked him if he could tell me where I could find the film. I was in a political science class at the time and thought it would help a presentation of mine. And this man, who I never met before, told me that the film was very hard to get and was quite valuable because it was produced in Japan, and that what I should do was to call his secretary so he could send me his copy. And I was so surprised by this, this bishop who just was, you know, giving something of personal great value away to a stranger. I just can't tell you how much his generosity and kindness impressed me. And as I learned more about his ministry, especially his work on the document, The Challenge of Peace, he was one of the authors of the Pastoral Letter on War, and came to know more about him, he became sort of a mentor from afar to me. I held him in so much respect for the witness he gave and his commitment to service to God and to peace and justice. And I corresponded with him for many years, and a few times invited him to speak at parishes where I was working. I have not talked to him for a few years, but I was thinking about a visit I had with him a while ago, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I'm not exactly sure. I just felt moved at that time to visit with him. I felt that he was somebody that I admired because he just made such a great difference in the life of our church. And I wanted to ask him how he thought I could do that. Now, I know that I realize as I say that, that sounds so presumptuous, but I don't know, somehow I just felt that the Spirit moved me or something, that I just really, I wanted to learn what he had to teach me about that. How can you work within our church in faithful service and really be able to make a difference in the life of the church? So I drove up to Detroit, and I got there early and sat outside this church in the inner city that he pastored and waited until somebody opened a side door. And I went inside, and the church, I thought, was completely empty, and I went to the back door. I entered near the front. I went to the back so I could kind of take in the whole view. And actually, I saw Bishop Dumbleton sitting there. He was already vested way before Mass was to start, sitting there praying the rosary. And anyway, I just waited in church, and we celebrated Mass. I was there in the congregation. And then when it was over, I went to his office to talk with him. And I had to wait for him for a few minutes. So I was sitting there and looking around and across the hall in the next room. I could see a mattress on the floor with books laying all over the place. And I just was impressed with a very simple life that this man led. And anyway, waited for him to come so I could ask him my profound question of how can I make a difference in the life of our church. And I was completely and utterly disappointed with his answer to me, which was simply, continue being yourself. And it wasn't until after I got home and I reflected on our visit some more, not only the meaning of the words that he spoke to me, but even more the meaning of what he taught to me from what I observed about his life there as a pastor of this parish, living a very simple life, being a person of prayer, and being someone who trusted in God through, you know, all the phases of his ministry, I think I really did learn some profound lessons from him. And, you know, at this time, as I look forward to the future, I don't know what my next ministry will be, but I do want to follow the example and the advice that Bishop Gumbleton gave to me, you know, being myself. So even writing my article in America and talking to you are part of that, Tim, you know, and leading a simple life, being a person of prayer, trusting in God. God has provided a wonderful life and wonderful adventures to me in ministry, and I just trust that there's more to come. So thanks for asking.
Well, thank
I'll have to tell you later where I end up.
Yes, no, definitely. Please keep us informed. And we want to thank you for spending some time with us and talking about sort of the changing face of parish leadership in this country and kind of one person's story. Dr. Foley, hopefully we can talk to you again soon.
Remember, it's Mary.
Mary, okay.
And thank you. I'm grateful for the opportunity, Tim.
We want to thank you for joining us for the America Magazine podcast. Reminder that you can respond to our conversations by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. We'd also like to thank Bill McGarvey, who provides the music for this show. You can learn more about him at billmcgarvey.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.